Well, speaking of filling up cars, let's talk cars with motoring journalist Ciro de Siena of cars.co.za, who is back with us to answer your motoring questions. A reminder that you can phone them through on 021-446-0567. You can send an SMS to 31567 or leave a question as a voice note on 072-567-1567. Great to have you back with us, Ciro. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Pippa. Good to be back.
And it's a tough life that you lead. You've spent the last couple of days, I believe, driving the new BMW M4. And reading some of the reviews, Ciro, quite a lot of the motoring journalists are saying it's had what they're describing as one of the most radical redesigns in the history of car making.
Yeah, and it's a redesign which has certainly got BMW a lot of attention. I cannot remember a car design receiving this much coverage on social media, traditional media, you name it. People have just been talking about it for ages, and it's this massive grill, massive treatment to the BMW traditional kidney grill, which they've given for the new 4 Series, the new M4, and the new 3 Series. I was expecting not to like it. I suppose looks are always subjective, but I must be honest, it grew on me. I think it does look better in real life. I think pictures is one of those cases where pictures don't really do it justice. But in real life, it sort of has this, it's been given this angular treatment, and the bonnet has been given these specific flares in the M4 to make it look a bit more hard-edged and a bit more aggressive. And I think the design is actually quite successful in that way. But it's definitely polarizing. I mean, it was funny. I put a tweet out a couple of days ago, and I said, I said to my followers, "What do you think of the M4?" So someone said, "At least you don't have to look at the grill while you're driving," which I thought was quite mean. But I think once you get past the looks, though, for me, this is a return to form for BMW. If you are a driving enthusiast, if driving is something that brings you joy, if sports cars and performance cars are something that you like to spend money on, I think that this latest M4 is probably one of the best BMWs I've ever driven, actually. Easily one of the best sports cars on the market right now. And in true BMW fashion, it's a bit of a technical tour de force. There's quite a lot going on under the surface. There's a lot of software in there, a lot of sort of traction control, dynamic stability control, making sure that you don't go off the road. Obviously, you can turn all of that off, but I don't recommend it at all. They've upped the power massively. The sort of German horsepower war for me, I'm not really sure where it's going to end. I mean, this car has something in the region of about 250% more power than the first M3, that's a sort of great grandfather. So, I mean, the power's gone absolutely through the roof. You're looking at 0 to 100 times of now of under 4 seconds, which basically translates into your neck being snapped backwards when you put your foot down. But I thought it ticked all the boxes from what you'd want from a dynamic sports car. It's fantastic through the corners. It makes a really, really wonderful noise. It's kind of starting to feel like a little bit of a dinosaur, given where things are going and given the fact that internal combustion engines are being banned and all the rest of it. So I think this is kind of the last hurrah for the BMW M sports cars. But, what a great effort it is. And if you have 2 million rand and you're looking to spend it on a sports car, I think there are definitely worse options out there.
All right, I was going to ask, so 2 million rand price tag, what would be its main competitors then, Ciro?
Well, at 2 million rand, it actually really puts itself into some very illustrious company. You know, you can pick up a very good Porsche for that kind of money. And a lot of my followers as well asked me, well, what do you think compared to the Porsche? Because Porsche brought out this latest version of their Cayman known as the GT4. And that's a proper mid-engine sports car. I mean, it's quite rare these days to have the engine behind you as the driver. And what that does is it sort of imbues the vehicle with very different handling characteristics. And characteristics which are sort of really preserved for very high-end supercars. So the fact that now you're looking at having a BMW M4 at the same price point as this Porsche means that the Porsche has to be the Beamer has to be very, very good indeed. It's got some really, really stiff competition. In my opinion, I actually wouldn't compare the two. I think they're quite different animals. The Porsche is not the sort of car you want to do long distance in, whereas I think you can in the BMW. It's quite comfortable in that respect as well. So they're slightly different tools for slightly different jobs. But sure, if I had to pick between the two, oh, no, don't ask me to do that. That's a tough one.
Okay. Final question, Chira. Does it come in any other color than the lime green version that you posted on Twitter? I couldn't get past the color. I'm hoping there's a bigger variety out there.
So if you're listening and you want to see what the color is called, Google Sao Paulo Yellow. That's its technical name. Somebody said to me it looks like a high visibility jacket, which is also actually quite accurate.
Yeah.
Yes, you definitely can get other colors. That's the launch color. So generally what the manufacturers try to do is send the launch color to the journalists because it sort of matches up with the marketing, advertising. Yeah, that's gone out. So that's why we get these cars and all these crazy colors. But yes, I think a slightly more subtle color. The interior on ours was also an electric blue. Mm. So it was really, it was bold. It was a very bold color choice there from BMW head office.
Looks like a lime milkshake. I don't think I could do it. But okay, so if you've got 2 million rand to spend and you want the last hurrah of the big roaring engines, there's the BMW M4. Chira, thanks, sir. Thanks for the update. Before we take any listener questions, we must mention something we've been hearing about periodically in our news bulletins, that there is a global shortage of semiconductor chips. Chira, you wanted to just chat today about what the impact has been on the car industry.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And the car industry is particularly heavily hit by this because most manufacturing in the car world happens according to a process called JIT, which just stands for just-in-time manufacturing. So essentially, car makers do not stockpile the parts that they use and need to build their cars. Literally, the parts arrive on site sort of as the cars are rolling through the production line. It's quite a fascinating process, actually, and for me, it would just give me anxiety. You know, what if the parts don't arrive? But basically, they practice minimal stockpiling. So now that the semiconductor squeeze is happening, it's not like they've got a big warehouse full of chips that they can just go and draw on. And it's really, the knock-on effect has been really, really serious. So Ford in America reckons they might have to, by the end of the year, reduce their production capacity by half.
Wow.
Because of this crisis. Yeah, it's massive. And the thing is, it's not really going to get any better. From what I understand, manufacturing semiconductors is very tricky and very expensive. And for some reason, it doesn't really happen outside of Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, and a little bit in China. There's not many made in the USA at all, for instance, and hardly any in Europe. So all of those companies before COVID were almost stretched to capacity. Then COVID hit and the sales of smart devices went absolutely through the roof. You know, iPads, smart TVs, smartphones, that sort of thing. That put a further squeeze on the supply. And then the manufacturers just couldn't buy enough to keep up, really. And if you take into account that modern cars are so complex, I mean, for instance, the new Land Rover Defender has 85 ECUs.
Wow.
So that's 85 chips that it needs per car. So it's, you know, that's how complex modern cars have become. So the knock-on effect for this, what I think is going to happen in South Africa and what I'm already starting to sort of hear whispers of from dealers is that they can't get enough stock. There's actually a situation now where demand is outstripping supply of new cars. And because of low interest rates around the world and because people are preferring private transport over public transport at the moment because of health safety in some countries. The dealers, it's time for them to make their money back after a horrendous 2020, and now they can't get cars to sell.
Oh.
So it's going to be very, very tough for motor dealers, I think, going into 2022, which is really sad.
Chira, final question. I mean, one assumes these chips are in all the fancy entertainment systems and the onboard computers, etc. But is there anything else that particularly that they're used for in cars?
Yeah, so for instance, you'd find that the communication systems that go between, say, the exhaust, the sort of the sensors which measure the oxygen in the exhaust and tell the fuel, the engine, how much fuel to use. So that'll be an ECU system. And then that'll be one separate system. Then you'll have a system which will sort of be controlling, say, the traction control. So in a 4x4, you need to know which wheels are slipping at which time. So that'll be a whole different system. So as well as the sort of screens and things which you can see in the car, underneath the skin, in the bodywork, are all these systems making sure that you stay on the road and stay safely on the road. And all of those are obviously impacted by the shortage.
Okay, so really important stuff. Okay, thanks for the update there. With that, we take some listener calls on 0214460567, your voice notes to 0725671567. And we'll start with a message that came in just too late for us last week from Nick, who has a VW automatic Tiguan approaching 100,000 kilometers on the clock and is a little worried. He says, should we be looking at trading it in for something with lower mileage, or does this vehicle have a reputation for continuing to be good at high mileage? He says, we love it. It's a safe, great family car. I'm just dreading a major issue. Your thoughts, Chiro?
I think that there's no, you know, there's no sort of particular data which would point to the Tiguan being a particularly problematic vehicle. My view of modern cars is that they've just become quite complicated and quite difficult to maintain and quite expensive to maintain as well. And if you are going to run a modern car out of warranty, I highly suggest getting an aftermarket warranty for the car, just to make sure that you're protected in the event that some, you know, really big expensive part goes. And then you're not sitting with this, you know, basically hunk of metal on your driveway that you can't afford to repair. If a car has been running well and hasn't given you any issues and you managed to get to 100,000 kilometers and the thing's paid off, then you might find that, you know, paying 600, 700, 800 rand a month for an aftermarket warranty is a lot more palatable than say paying 7,000, 8,000 rand a month on installments on a new car.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of math really needs to be done, you know, and look at sort of the look at the replacement cost of the car and what you have and what it would now cost on the market, because that car at 100,000 Ks is probably, I would say, about 5 years old. And then in the last 5 years, you probably find that the market's gone up 20-25%. So to replace that car now, you're now spending 20-25% more than you spent back when you bought it. So all those things considered, and if the car has been problem-free, I would say it's probably a good bet to hang on to it, actually. Usually by 100,000 Ks, if a car is going to have a big issue, it would have probably had it by that point. But also definitely worth getting the service plan and maintenance schedule for the car, so that you know what services are expected to happen, say, between 100,000 and 200,000. You might find that injectors need to be replaced or catalytic converters need to be replaced, that sort of thing. So it's good to know what you're in for as well.
That's sound advice. Thanks very much, Chiro. Somebody else with a very similar themed question, although a quite different scenario, has a 2011 Hilux SRX, which has done 220,000 Ks, has been regularly serviced. It's a 2.4 diesel engine. It got a new clutch at 180,000 Ks. Weekend warrior, so goes off-road approximately once every 2 months. Similar question, how long can I push it before it's likely to become too costly to maintain or too unreliable?
I suppose we really are a Hilux country, because, you know, they really do just seem to keep going, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of tales of people running their Hiluxes past 500,000 Ks and beyond. Again, it's one of those situations where if the car has been well maintained and it hasn't had any major issues to this point, you've probably dodged all the major issues that it might have had along the way. You know, you've avoided what they call in the industry a lemon, I suppose.
Yeah.
And you got yourself a good one. So, again, it would be about sourcing an aftermarket warranty. I think they're really valuable. It's not a huge amount of money to pay every month for that extra peace of mind, in my opinion. And then again, it's the same as the advice for the Tiguan owner. You know, look at what the replacement cost on that car would be. You know, if you're going to be paying 8,000 rand a month to service a car, I mean, to service an installment, you know, you could put that 8,000 rand into a savings account. At the end of the year, you've got nearly 100,000 rand. something goes wrong on the car, then you've got a bit of a war chest to sort it out, and you've got some savings. So that's sort of the way I like to look at things. Of course, it's always nice to drive a brand new car, which has a service plan and a warranty and all the rest of it. But I think there are a few ways to skin the cat, especially if you've got a car which has proven itself to be reliable.
Thanks very much, Chir. It sounds like we've got some very good, conscientious drivers who look after their cars quite well on our audience by the look of things. Chir, a WhatsApp asking, somebody saying, I'm considering a new Audi A3. Is there anything I should be aware of?
Audis are basically Volkswagens under the skin. So parts availability is never really an issue. The parts are common across. The A3 is based on the Golf. So that's never really an issue. If you're going new, I mean, Audi's maintenance plan is a very complete maintenance plan. From what I understand, it's sort of a bumper-to-bumper plan, really, where if anything goes on the car, they'll pretty much replace it, no questions asked. I have had, in the years that we've been doing this program, Pippa, I did have one person who reached out to me who really just got unlucky. They got an absolute lemon of an Audi A3. And he sent me the invoices for what Audi had replaced under maintenance plan, and they'd basically rebuilt the car. I don't know why they didn't just give him a new one.
Yeah.
So, but that was the only horror story I've ever heard. Other than that, I don't think A3s have too many issues. There was a time, just if there's anyone out there who's looking at used A3s, there was a time when they were sold with the 1.4 petrol engine coupled to the DSG automatic gearbox. And that combination did seem to be problematic. If I was on the used car market, I'd avoid that combination. But I don't think they sell that combination anymore in the latest model.
Chiro, as always, thank you so much for the expertise and the advice you share with our listeners. And just remind us, if we want to check out more of your writing and see some of the videos you've been shooting, the cars.co.za YouTube channel is the best place to go.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, that would be great. Thank you.
Great. Chiro de Siena from cars.co.za. Of course, you can also visit the website itself to do some more research on your purchasing plans. And he's with us next week, Wednesday. So if there's a question you'd like to hear answered, you're welcome to send it in advance by emailing me on pippah@capetalk.co.za.